Good evening and welcome along to another edition of Midweek Motorsport. I'm John Hindorf, live from my living room in Wellingborough. We have got the kitchen finished now, so we could have used the dining room, but to be quite honest, it's much more comfortable in here. Joining me in Wellingborough tonight is our Formula One correspondent, Nick Damon.
Hello there, John. It's very comfortable indeed.
And down in London, as ever, making sure everything runs well and keeping the whole radio station under control is Tim Gray. Good evening, Tim.
Good evening, John. Wellingborough tonight, that sounds like a regional news programme.
Not very exciting one.
Yes, well, you have seen Milton Keynes Radio, haven't you?
Milton Keynes TV.
TV?
Yeah.
Which shows, for some reason, only ever shows a basketball match between Plymouth and Newcastle, which are about as diametrically opposite from Milton Keynes they could be.
It was the trophy final, wasn't it, though?
But what has he got to do with Milton Keynes?
It was held in Milton Keynes.
I don't think it was.
No, it was Sheffield, actually.
It was held at Sheffield Concourse Arena.
So, yeah, so it's a team
someone
from the northeast, a team
Keynes
from the southwest, and it was held in Sheffield. So, let's put on Milton Keynes TV.
Milton Keynes TV do have the right to all of the British Basketball League.
You've digressed already, Nick, and we haven't even got onto your bit. Tim, oh, this is going to be a classic episode, I can see this one, definitely. On a packed programme tonight, no basketball, but what, Tim Gray?
We have a lot of news to get through.
All right.
It was a very busy weekend.
It was a newsy weekend, was it?
Week so far.
We've got a spy case to talk about.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about a little attaché that has knives coming out of the end.
I was thinking we should get the music for that. And what could we
Mission
have?
Impossible.
Well, I was thinking more about Paul McCartney and Wings, Spies Like Us.
That wasn't a very good film, though.
No.
No, the song was okay.
Did you get the music for the letters page tonight?
We have the music for the letters page.
Yes!
So we will be doing letters tonight.
Letters tonight. But first, we'll start off. Shut up, you. First, we'll have no time left after we've done what's coming later. First, we'll start as tradition dictates with a review of the motorsport news, and that's coming up next here on Midweek Motorsport.
All the week's motorsport news, Midweek Motorsport on Globecast Radio.
So here we are then, let's kick off this week's Midweek Motorsport with the motorsport headlines. Tim Gray, what do you have for us?
I wish I could answer that, John. Unfortunately, I'm not allowed to.
Why?
I'm not allowed to make any kind of comment. I'm simply not allowed to.
Is this something has something to do with the High Court case that's going on at the moment?
Well,
yes.
The High Court case is over.
Mm.
It is.
It has been. There's been a.
It's been put on hold.
No,
hasn't it? It's got a safety car out at the moment.
It's been stopped.
It's been stopped early.
It's been
red
stopped,
flagged.
It's been red flagged because what's happened is.
Had it reached 75% distance?
No,
it hadn't.
So,
it had trolled off and it's been stopped because Mr. Coughlan and his wife have agreed to accede to Ferrari's demands, produce a written affidavit, which basically says that they will incriminate who Ferrari wants incriminated in return for the dropping of the UK side of the case, and I think a tacit understanding that they will not be prosecuted in Italy either. So, effectively,
Ferrari have agreed to withdraw their request to the High Court to make the information and material collected, including the affidavit, in their application against Coughlan, available to the Modena district attorney in Italy. He said, Coughlan, this is, said he didn't provide his affidavit yesterday as it was unclear if it could be self-incriminating and used against him in Italy. The Modena district attorney has opened criminal investigation against Ferrari stalwart Nigel Stepney after the Italian filed a formal complaint against the Briton. Remains to be seen whether any further court hearing will be scheduled in London over the affair. It's an odd old thing, isn't it?
It's getting odder by the moment. I mean, Nigel came out and answered some questions over the weekend, denying any wrongdoing, painting a picture of effectively a total breakdown in communications in relationship with the Ferrari factory. And, you know, that he's been the victim of the Dirty Tricks campaign.
So he knows where the bodies are buried.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's always kind of a knee-jerk reaction. I don't think that really helped him in saying that, to be honest. I mean,
can we just do a quick catch-up on this, right?
Okay.
Let me run through this from a layman's point of view, and you correct me if I'm wrong. Nigel Stepney and Mike Coughlan have worked together in the past and are intending to work together.
For Ferrari?
Yeah.
For John Barnard's part of Ferrari years ago.
Right, and intending to work together again for Honda.
Yeah, this is, I think, can I just give you a chronological situation?
Right.
Nigel Stepney effectively fell out with Ferrari around about Christmas time.
Yep.
He wanted to get a promotion when Ross Brawn went. Well, he didn't get a promotion, he wanted a sabbatical.
Right.
And he then gave an interview to Autosport saying, I'm not very pleased. At that point, the relationship with Ferrari began to sour dramatically.
Yep.
Wind forward.
Monaco Grand Prix.
Monaco Grand Prix. Suddenly, there's just after Ferrari have said that
they were on about sabotage, weren't they?
Sabotage and that
white detergent powder.
They were never on about sabotage. What happened was they said that they were pursuing an action against an employee, mm-hmm. which became Nigel very quickly. Then it was leaked to the press that this was supposed to be a white powder in a. Fuel
in the
tank.
Fuel, yeah.
And as Nigel's already...
And this was detergent, by the way. It wasn't anything else.
And more importantly, it does seem a bit like a tent to smear his name. Then we find out that in the end of April, Mike Coughlan and Nigel were seen chatting after the Barcelona test, or mm-hmm. around the time of the Barcelona test. And then some days after that, Mrs. Coughlan, is it Trudy?
Trudy,
was,
yes.
Seen photocopying large amounts of Ferrari documents
pages.
At the local. Oh well, I assume at the local Pronto Print, and it was an employee at the local. I'm saying Pronto Print, it might be somebody else. The local Pronto Print who actually tipped off Ferrari this was going on. Now
it's nonsense.
There is no A to B. There's no proof. This is absolutely hypocritical. There's no proof that Nigel Stepney passed the information to Mike Coughlan at the moment. The extra part of the mystery which was added to this weekend and which John alluded to was that I forgot his first name, Mr. Fry at
Nick Fry
at Honda. I think it was Stephen Fry, that would be amusing. I mean, again, it's a bit of a comedy over there, isn't it? Anyway, so Nick Fry said he had a meeting with Nigel and Mike Coughlan to discuss them both coming on board for Honda. So they obviously were in conversation. They obviously are looking to move. Now, they said, what can they bring of Ferraris that is valuable to anybody else, which isn't already in their head?
What about this?
Computer discs with 780 pages of...
Of what?
But hang on a second. If you had two computer discs, why would you be photocopying the original document, and how did the original document get out of the
factory,
if that's the case?
Yeah,
I think this is all nonsense.
And also, have you not seen that they say the documents were to do with procedures? They weren't actually, like, designed. They were to do with sort of the working procedures of the organisation.
Logistics,
quality control,
yeah.
Reliability, all the sort of stuff that, you know, how...
Like a company handbook.
Exactly. But not anything to do with wings or flips or anything.
What do you make of Ron Dennis handing the car over to the scrutineers, the McLarens over to the scrutineers, and saying, have a look at this, just to prove that we haven't got any Ferrari technology in there? I mean, that's nonsense as well, because all of the teams employ photographers to stand in front of all of the other teams' pits to photograph everything that's going on.
Well, exactly. But also, I mean, the reason is that Ron may have his faults, but he's a man of integrity. And any accusation he's been in receipt of illegal documents would hurt him very deeply. Mm. He trades on his reputation, and in all honesty, he hasn't really ever... There's no evidence that he's ever let himself down on that front. Mm. He is incredibly impeccable, given how many bodies are buried, as you say, John. Mm. They don't stick with Ron. Ron's always been reputation, and he takes it very seriously. His reputation is a very upstanding guy, and his reputation is incredibly important to him. Hence the reason he basically went onto his offensive, saying, you know, Mike Coughlan may have done something wrong. It does also appear that a guy called Jonathan Neal, who is the MD, may have known what was going on, but again, this is rumour and counter-rumour, so we have to say this is alleged, we don't know, but it seems it may have gone more than one member of McLaren, but Roy is very much saying the racing organisation, because Jonathan Neal, despite being the MD, is not actually involved very much in the racing organisation, he's more involved, again, in the procedural organisation, the company organisation, he's the sort of guy who looks after HR, he's the sort of guy who looks after the technology centre, he may get involved with, you know, high-level sponsorship, but he is not involved with the relationship with the engine manufacturer or the wind tunnel or that sort of thing. And it all kind of gets more and more complicated. Instead of Nick Fry sticking his all in, it comes to say, the point is, where do the documents come which Mike Coughlan's wife was obviously photocopying? So there are some legal documents. Who gave them to him? And Nigel Stepney is absolutely categorically saying it wasn't him. Mm. And let's be honest, anybody can send a past documents to Mike Coughlan's home address.
Yeah.
From Ferrari. It's definitely nice, definitely. And so you sit there going, we just don't know. And the whole thing about it is it comes down to two things. either Nigel Stepney has done something very silly, which is very silly because it's very traceable, this sort of thing,
yeah,
or he's being framed. And in both cases, you go, well, why would they bother?
Yeah.
Why would Ferrari bother framing Nigel when all they have to do is pay him off for a year?
Yeah.
And they can afford it. Why would Nigel Stepney screw up his career when he only has to work out his garden leave and he can go anyway?
Yeah.
So that is the main mystery to me. What on earth is going on?
Well, there's another twist to this, of course.
Is there?
Because both Coughlan and Stepney were, of course, talking to Nick Fry about going to work for Honda.
Yes.
Honda have now appointed Jörg Zander,
who was at Sauber and prior to that Williams, but neither of them for very long.
He was he had worked at BAR as well before in 2002, then moved to Williams as chief designer
after Gavin Fisher was removed
alongside Loic Bijouard, and then he went to BMW Sauber when.
But that was like March last year, wasn't it?
It was March last year, yes.
Yeah, and so he's only lasted 15 months. Now he's gone to join Mr. Bijouard again at. I mean, I think it doesn't surprise me that
Honda rapidly changing sports, apparently.
Well, it doesn't actually surprise me that Honda were talking to Nigel Stepney and
Craig Bellamy.
I mean, the Honda's problem is their senior management, and that includes Mr. Fry, is confused. They've made the mistake of putting Japanese people who don't know about Formula 1 in there, and they desperately need to get some Europeans. This is not jingoistic, it's just a fact. You know, it's been proven again and again and again that the Japanese way doesn't work in Formula 1. And so if they heard that Mike Ockland, who is the chief designer of the very successful car, and Nigel Stepney, who is a fantastic team manager, were available, they'd be talking to them. Mm. And as they have been everyone else, because they are desperately need a senior personnel after they obviously got rid of Jeff Willis last year. Mm. So that doesn't surprise me. Everything else is just, it's kind of stopped surprising me. Just my brow gets more furrow as I try and work out on earth scale than what anyone has to gain by it.
I have a feeling that it's not the last we'll hear of this. It's one of the few times that Formula One's been getting any coverage on national news media, other than to mention a certain Englishman who didn't win again at the weekend.
What, Jenson Button?
Yeah, he's on a slump, isn't he?
No, and
what's that other guy? He's young lad. Louise.
Hamill. Hamill something.
That's him. Louise Hamilton. Yes. That's a girl. The first female.
Wow.
Lily Ray Wilson.
Yeah, you can.
Spyker have dropped Dutch Formula One driver Christian Albers due to non-payment by one of his main sponsors.
They must be so chuffed that happened.
He's been outperformed in the first half of the season by rookie German teammate Adrian Sutil.
Oh, has he not?
Finished higher than 13th.
Well,
Spyker,
yeah,
who have yet to score a point in
or look like scoring a point.
And said an announcement on Alba's replacement and the financial conditions would be made in due course.
Apparently, Christian Alba said he was unpleasantly surprised. He says it came as a surprise to him. He'd been promised a seat for the whole season.
Yeah, you've got
to
pay your bills.
Despite the problems with his sponsors, problems with the previously named sponsor, I got a written and vocal agreement in January that I would drive the entire year.
But let's be honest, in January... Christian Alba had a kind of a reputation by now, having been comprehensively beaten, as I said, by Adrian Sutil at every single race, and driving off with his fuel line still attached.
Hang on a second. Lewis nearly did that at the weekend as well.
He didn't do it.
Okay.
Nearly and actually are
okay.
Two very different things, John.
All right.
Yeah. And making a fool of himself and just basically underperforming massively. You know, Spyker at that point looking for an excuse. And they don't want to get into breach of contract. I'm sure his contract says non-payment means you're out, and you're out. Bang. And so now we have the exciting merry-go-round of who's going to replace him.
It's time for Wheel or No Wheel.
Oh, but I do know it's not going to be Thiago Monteiro, is it? Please tell me it's not Thiago Monteiro.
Apparently it's not going to be Thiago Monteiro.
Oh, thank goodness.
Narain Karthikeyan, the Williams test driver, and Christian Kleen, the Honda test driver, are both being considered to replace Christian Albers.
And they had Guido van der Garde out there, yes, Tuesday at Spa doing a day's testing.
Did they?
Mm.
Yes, of course, because he is now at Spike and not Super.
He is there. They've sorted that one out. Yes. And Christian Kleen, as John said, is going to test tomorrow.
And what about possibilities of a young Mr. Winkelhock?
Yes, well, that was quite interesting. That was, if they could make the decision in time, they put Marcus in for Germany because it's his home race and they owe him some miles, apparently. It was a great quote, I thought. So let's choose our race drivers on who we owe some miles to.
Mm.
But, no, Narain obviously has some money, and I think he's very loosely the test driver, William, because can you remember the last time he had a test?
No.
Because Kazuki Nakajima's been getting all the miles.
Mm.
So he's not done very much, and so it's Narain and his money from Tata, the trucks. Or it's obviously Christian Klien and his money from I don't know where, really. Does he have any money now he hasn't got Red Bull backing?
Point, isn't it?
I'm not sure. Mark Perkins, who is Narain's manager, said, Spiker hope Narain can do a better job than Albers.
Well, doing pit stops properly would be a good start. I think the thing is, you've got to remember it, it's all relative. I mean, you know, you could put Michael Schumacher could come back in the Spiker, he still would only qualify in 19th, you know. It is, you know, a pile off the proverbial compared to the rest of the pack.
Apparently, Narain Karthikeyan has also had an offer from Racing Engineering in the GP2 series. Now, Racing Engineering recently replaced Sergio Hernandez with an Esto Viso, who then
crashed
and knocked himself out. On the first lap of his first race for them.
Not a way to endear yourself, is it, really?
He was unable to race at Silverstone because he had suffered concussion in Manicor and was replaced by Philippe Albuquerque. But obviously there are other clashing races for Albuquerque.
I don't believe it wasn't somebody else in that GP2 field, or do we not have that jingle?
Yes, but he's racing for BCN.
Oh, I see.
Own.
Right, okay. Yeah, I mean, I think it's looking more like that Christian Klien will get the role. I mean, and again, you kind of wonder, it just goes to prove that racing drivers will race anything, even if it's rubbish rather than test. But I suppose the Honda isn't that good, so he's only moving about four places back on the grid.
They have been testing at Spa this week.
They have, the new revised Spa.
Mm.
Which makes his return to the calendar after being dropped last year, where I said there was apparently a fantastic new pits complex for the people who were there for the
yes, we've been there.
The sports race. It's very nice there.
I was there for the very first event.
And it's very good new pit. And obviously, the bus stop is no longer the bus stop. It's now a different chicane going the other way. There's a new pit entrance that isn't very popular.
Now, that's interesting because what was the first thing I said about that pit when I came back from having a look at it was, and I said it at Le Mans, I said, no one's going to like that because it's a blind pit entry, and if anything goes wrong in there, you're going to have a big shunt.
The big problem they've got is if they get a safety car and everyone peels off at warp speed, and obviously they start hitting the, you know, they get a small queue and they start, or actually thinking about it, it's more likely is you get rain at Spa halfway through a race.
No, surely not.
Apparently I've heard about this, and they all peel off and they whack up the full speed and people obviously break at different points to make the speed limit lines. I think there's a possibility that if they haven't got a good view through that one. So, yes, they've been testing there, and I think Lewis was fast on Tuesday. I haven't got I know that lunchtime, I haven't got this evening's ones yet, but lunchtime was Felipe Massa was slightly faster than Alonso. But the interesting thing I thought was Mr. Bourdais is out there again for Toro Rosso.
Just hope it doesn't rain.
It was Luzzi in the Toro Rosso.
He can't drive in the rain.
Who did a 149, didn't he? How was...
I said, amazing lunchtime results, and I believe it's he did a 149 as well. I think 148.5, 149 he'd done. But I think it's pretty obvious, if you look at the Red Bull, whilst we're doing wheel, no, we're talking about drivers, obviously one of the things that happened over the weekend was that DC re-signed for Red Bull. Webb's on a two-year contract, so that youth-orientated team will now have 36 now, DC, is he? And obviously Webber's over 30, and the youngsters
knows by how much.
Yes, and the youngsters at Toro Rosso, Mr. Liuzzi and Scott Speed, are now sitting here going, right, are we going to have a drive? And my bet is no. I think they're going to probably out both of them. I think that if Berger got his way, he'd like to see Bourdais and Bruno Senna.
Ah,
okay. Liuzzi has been linked with a drive. Where was it I saw Liuzzi was being lined up for this week?
It's the drive that...
Was it Toyota?
Well, Toyota apparently... Toyota's first choice is Nick Heidfeld. Mm. Toyota's second choice is Nico Rosberg.
In that case, it might have been Liuzzi to BMW to replace Heidfeld.
Well, what they're saying is if Heidfeld gets that role, and then they reckon Rosberg will go over to BMW. But they are missing out the fact that, of course, BMW have both Glock and Vettel under contract.
Yeah, don't mess with Glock.
No.
Now, and also we have had a couple of emails in about this, what you were talking about the other week about the second coming. And apparently you were wrong. It's not Jesus. In fact, he's a South American. It's Jesus.
Ah, I see. Jesus, yes. Yeah.
Racing for Jesus.
Jesus in the Williams, that's right, yeah.
Absolutely. Next story, I think.
Quickly before we take a break, and there will be more news later for those who are news fans, but quickly before that, some more rally news.
I'm a news fan.
François Duval has confirmed that he won't be taking part in any more of this year's WRC with the first motorsport Skoda Fabia.
Wasn't François Duval one of the guys whose career was entirely based upon the fact that he was backed by a tobacco manufacturer? And once that obviously has now gone at the end of 2006, you kind of thought, well, that's your career gone, Francois, because no one really rates you. But and once the fags aren't backing you,
he's done one rally this year.
Was that the Nicorette rally?
He says he could be back as early as Rally Deutschland, though, with Suzuki.
Right. What a motorbike.
Might be faster than one of the Skodas.
That's true.
It's the new SX, which has been testing extensively recently.
I really ought to be quiet, because I know nothing about rallying, so...
No,
and you don't like it either.
And
no.
We'll have something in the letters about your comments about rallying later on in the programme.
I think it'll be a sway of people backing my opinions.
Do you think so?
Yes.
Do you think so?
Well, have you got my email received in them? Yes.
All the week's motorsport news. Midweek Motorsport on Globecast Radio.
July on Globecast Radio, and our live sports car coverage continues with round 7 of the American Le Mans Series on Friday and Saturday, the 20th and 21st of the month. At the last race, the lighter, more nimble P2 cars took all three podium positions with a 1-2 for DHL Penske Porsche. Can the diesel power of Audi push them off the top spot, or will the challenge be from the P2 Acura teams? Join me, John Hindorf, for live coverage of practice and qualifying on Friday with warm-up and the whole race live on Saturday. Into the second half of the American Le Mans Series season with round 7 from Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course. All of the action is exclusively live here on Globecast Radio.
Live on the American Le Mans Series on Globecast Radio. Every lap, every race.
If it's happening in motorsport, you'll hear about it on Midweek Motorsport.
Midweek Motorsport.
Globecast Radio's definitive international motorsport magazine show.
Globecast Radio. I love cars, I love sport, I love music.
Midweek Motorsport.
Globecast Radio.
Well, the Bridgestone e-reporter competition continues, and the third of the finalists this year went to Silverstone at the weekend. That was Michael. Good evening, Michael.
Hello there.
3 days at Silverstone in what turned out to be gorgeous weather. What did you learn?
I learned an awful lot. Basically, GP2, which I was reporting on for Bridgestone, an incredibly friendly atmosphere. Much more open than Formula One. I have a look in the Grand Prix paddock, and it's full of glamour and razzmatazz. But you can certainly sense that distance between the fans and the cars, whereas GP2 is much more open. You know, you could walk around the garages, talk to the drivers even, whereas Formula One is very closed off. And obviously, you know, those VIP passes are enforced pretty strictly.
Yes. Now, GP2, of course, running on the usual system of practice session, qualifying session, feature race and sprint race. Let's go through what happened in each of those sessions one by one. Let's start on Friday with practice and qualifying. What do we see occurring on track?
Well, the strong signs were that iSports have got a very strong package. Zuba and Glock were putting in good times in practice. We saw Mike Conway back on form for Supernova. He's struggled to get results before Silverstone, but certainly shown speed. But come qualifying, it was Zuba on pole. Because Glock had problems and was down in fifth. But Mike Conway on the front row, that was fantastic for the home fans. And Adam Carroll actually put in a great performance, sixth on the grid for Fisichella Motorsport. And it was great to see him back, because he's been racing in DTM this year, but I think he really belongs in single-seaters. So to see him come back after a year away, really, and be so competitive was fantastic.
Well, it is nearly a whole year away, even though we're only halfway through the season, because last year's season ended sort of early September, and he's done no single-seater testing at all since then.
And then, of course, the weekend before, he'd kind of been thrown into the car at the deep end in Manicourt and then disqualified for some infringement or other. And it's just nice to see him bounce back so quickly. And obviously the pace is there. And given that he's done something like 4,000 kilometres testing the Honda Grand Prix car in the past, you know, he's clearly a driver with vast experience, brings a lot to a team, and definitely belongs in GP2. And hopefully, you know, he's going to complete the season with FSM. And I wouldn't be surprised if he won more races, to be honest.
Well, obviously Adam won the Sunday race, but let's go back to the Saturday race and talk about what happened in there. Back at Manicourt, we'd seen two cars collide at the start. That didn't happen at Silverstone, but it was a reasonably good race on Saturday, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Silverstone's a great track for overtaking in GP2 at least, and in the Grand Prix on Sunday as well, we saw that, but even more so in GP2. I mean, Mike Conway did his best to beat Zuber. And I spoke to Mike afterwards, and he conceded really that his outlap wasn't quick enough to beat Zuber at the stop. So they were very evenly matched. If you look at the fastest lap times, Zuber was quicker on his best lap. But of course, Timo Glock had all kinds of technical problems, did score fastest lap, but didn't complete enough laps to actually get the point. So it was kind of galling for him, seeing his championship lead slashed. And I think that was the real message of the weekend, that Timo Glock needs to get some good results again to try and you know, increase his lead, because four races in a row, scoring no points. It's seen the championship close right up. But for Andreas Zuber, that was a fantastic race, because obviously crashing into his teammate the week before, he needed to do something special to put a smile back on Paul Jackson's face at iSports, so it was nice to see him do that.
Well, you had a chance to talk to Paul Jackson at the weekend, didn't you? Did he talk at all about what happened at Manicourt, or was he focused solely on Silverstone?
He was very open, actually, and you know, he put it down to one of those things where the unthinkable happens. And he obviously made it clear that he doesn't want his drivers doing that again. But the great thing about Paul Jackson is he's a racer through and through. He doesn't have any interest in team orders, really, you know, holding his drivers back. As long as they race fair and clean, he hasn't got a problem with that. And that's the kind of approach we want to see in racing.
Also, some... suggestion as to what Paul Jackson and iSport might be moving into in the future in terms of other championships?
Yeah, there's a bright future for iSport looking at the GP2 Aegis series. This is a fantastic concept, really. Going to utilise the current generation cars rather than just sending them back to a garage or a museum. They're actually going to be racing over the winter. Paul was just explaining to me that this is an ideal chance to test out new drivers over the winter for the main GP2 series, because it's all very well, you know, testing guys Jerez or wherever, but you don't necessarily get all the questions answered. But in a race weekend, they have all the pressure, they actually have the start, a pit stop strategy and stuff like that, so it's an ideal arena. And also Formula BMW, the kind of European-based series that's going to be in for next year, I think Paul's very keen on running a team in that as well, which gives him a chance to evaluate young drivers and perhaps, you know, keep tabs on them for the future. It's all about building the operation, and he's certainly open to the possibility of other ventures as well.
Did you get to talk to any of the other team bosses in as much detail as you did with Paul?
I did grab a few words with David Price, and obviously DPR have struggled this season for various reasons, and he did wryly note
them on Saturday with neither driver finishing the race, and that meant both of them starting on the back row on Sunday, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty hideous weekend all round, but David Price was very open that the team haven't done perhaps the best job this season. But the strength in depth is there. They've had a fantastic pedigree in sports cars. I'm sure that they will get back on track. And he had, you know, nothing bad to say about the drivers. You know, when the clutch fails on both cars, that really isn't the fault of the driver. It's just one of those nightmare weekends, I guess.
Now, you also got to talk to GP2 technical boss Didier Peran about the new car which is being launched for the championship next year. What have you learnt about that new car?
Well, for one thing, it's going to be state-of-the-art, even more so than the current car. I think Bridgestone are going to make a big push on the tyre development to make sure it's quicker. I think still receiving technical support from Renault as well, something like 600 horsepower V8 engine. I mean, the ideal scenario for GP2 is to be a couple of seconds off Grand Prix racing, so the drivers are perfectly prepared to kind of step into Formula 1 after a few tests. And you only have to look at Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg, the champions of the past 2 years, stepping into F1 and doing a very good job. You know, see, the GP2 is so much better at preparing drivers than the old F3000 was. So I think there's a bright future. And obviously, with the technical revisions that they bring in each year, it's not just a three-year generation car. It's going to be different each year. So, you know, there's not going to be stagnation on the technical front.
Now, move on to Sunday's race, which we mentioned Adam Cowell getting the win, but again, another very exciting race. And Cowell, who started second on the grid, a fantastic move for the lead, Bridge Corner.
It was absolutely breathtaking, and I actually spoke to Adam afterwards, and he was not too impressed with Pastor Maldonado's driving, really, kind of accusing him of perhaps having a little bit of a naughty brake test. But Adam Carroll's a very experienced racer. He's not going to be put off by things like that. It was a glorious move around the outside. I mean, Maldonado did a good job, I think, to really to hold on to second at the end, because Kazuki Nakajima was flying, setting fastest lap again. And Maldonado, obviously, you know, he's a good driver, having won Monaco with a very dominant performance, but perhaps a little bit uncomfortable with his racing tactics from some of the drivers. But Adam Carroll, fantastic win, and it was great to see, you know, one of the home drivers win at Silverstone.
Now, you've written a number of articles for the Bridgestone eReporter website over the course of the weekend. They're available for anybody to go and look at now, aren't they? So where can we find them?
Just on the Bridgestone website, www.bridgestone.eu, click on eReporter, and there's all kinds of stuff on there, not just my articles, everyone else's, which are all very, very well written. And there's four remaining finalists, so I think people should certainly check out what they can write, and you know, I wish the best of luck to the remaining finalists.
And, of course, you and the other six finalists will be judged by the panel after the Italian Grand Prix, and one of you gets to go to Valencia for the final two rounds of the GP2 series to report on that as well. So possibly another trip to another major international motorsport event for you.
I mean, that would be a fantastic opportunity. And obviously to cover motorsport from Spain is going to be a nice sunny experience, but you know, regardless of who wins, I've certainly taken a lot from the past weekend. Had a fantastic experience, and having attended the Grand Prix for the first time, thanks to Bridgestone, you know, I've got the utmost admiration for them.
One thing I should ask you, of course, when you entered this competition, how likely did you think it would be that you would get this far?
Well, I wouldn't have entered the competition if I didn't think I had a chance. But obviously it comes down to what they're looking for on the writing front. And I wrote a piece suggesting that, you know, perhaps Mike Conway was the best bet for a GP2 driver to make it into Formula 1 from this season. And looking at his form, British F3 champion, Macau Grand Prix winner, and he tested very well for Supernova. I think that still stands, you know, right now. And obviously at the weekend, he performed very well. And I think, it's, you know, it's always worth entering these competitions if you, you know, believe you have a chance. Because you never know. I mean, the judges are obviously looking for some very talented writers, but if you believe in what you write, then enter the competition.
And were you at all disappointed to find out that they were sending you to Silverstone and not to some other exotic European circuit?
Well, having read Tom Hornsby's blogs from, I think it was Spain he went to, with all the travel problems, I'm quite happy with Silverstone. It was the home of British motor racing. It's a fantastic track. And to be honest, I think seeing Formula 1 in my home country, you know, you couldn't really better that apart from Monaco. So there was no question of being disappointed with that. And, you know, going to a Grand Prix free, paid for by Bridgestone, and meeting all the teams, there's no negatives at all. So I was very, very happy with that.
Okay, Michael, well, good luck, and let's hope we see you again in Valencia. Mike, thanks very much for talking to us this evening.
Thanks very much.
Globecast Radio. All the week's motorsport news. Midweek Motorsport on Globecast Radio.
So time to slot in a second bit of motorsport news with Tim Greer. He's the man with the headlines. What have you got for us, Tim?
Tom Ferrier will return to the British Touring Car Championship at Donington Park this weekend.
He's got Gareth Howell's job, has he?
He'll be driving a number 24 set to Lader for Motorbase Performance, replacing Gareth Howell.
And what exactly did Gareth do wrong? Apart from being hit by people.
He wasn't getting on well with the team, apparently, but they parted on good terms. And
who left who here? Because I've heard that...
What, so what's going to do? So have they accused you of putting some white powder in the fuel tank? And has he been seen down at Seat with some photocopying?
Yeah, but unfortunately their complete handbook was only two pages.
That's true, yeah.
So that was the difference.
Prestigious get-in car drive.
Yeah, that was it. I've heard that Gareth has walked away, and then I've heard another report that says that the team and he have parted company instigated by the team. Which way around do we think it is?
Well, neither side has said that he's been sacked, so I think it's an amicable parting.
Basically, what's been happening is that he's been, I think he's had a 6 or 7 shunt, courtesy of the fact that he's been qualifying midfield, and really, when anything's going to happen, it normally does happen in the middle of the park.
I would assume as well, given the fact that we've just come exactly halfway through the series, that he was due to pay some more money.
Yeah,
and therefore he decided not to bother.
It can't help, though, if you're always,
The budget has nothing to do with it, and he does have a budget for the rest of the season.
Yes, but whether he wants to use
it somewhere else.
Exactly. Yes.
Exactly.
It can't be easy for you, though, in a team like that. Dave Bartram and the guys at Motorsport are one of the hardest working set of guys in the paddock. But when you come home with damaged cars after every race, and you've only got 2 weeks to get them sorted, it rather curtails the opportunity to go out and test.
Let's be honest.
Well, testing's limited, of course, anyway. You're only there for 4 days.
We all see a lot of British Touring Car action, and it is carnage in the middle of the pack. You know, if you're not in the top three and you're not the back three, you've got, 16 cars, which any one of which can go quick or slow, any one of which can hit you any moment due to brain fade or over optimism. And whilst it's fine for Vauxhall and Sayat and even West Surrey, they can fix those bits and bobs. The other people have got some problems in keeping up, and possibly with the repairs, and possibly with Matt Allison and Gareth both pushing very hard with a car that is almost there. So it's not like they're going to trump like some of the cars which are off pace, which kind of accept they're going to be 15th.
Yeah.
Both those guys want to move forward and are pushing very hard.
Yeah.
And they have been involved in more than their fair share of accidents.
Mostly not of their own making.
Well, mostly because there are two cars trying to be on the same piece of track at the same time, and most of them are actually no-fault accidents.
Just
touring car racing incidents. And I think, obviously, as we were at Alton Park, there are a great many drivers there not really respecting the conditions combined with the limited runoff there, hence the reasons for the panel damage. And there is a little bit of a point where you do think that these teams need to sit down with their drivers and say, look, guys, this weekend, get the damn things home. Mm. And a good driver, a good British driver, a British level driver, should be able to do that. Stay out of trouble, get the car home. Mm. And if you do that, you'll finish 7th or 8th. Mm. If you're not going to win, but if you get a 7th or 8th in the second round, you might reverse yourself up the front.
Yeah, and all of a sudden be
into the podium. If you've got a car, those sets are good enough if they get a bit of fresh air to run fast enough for a podium place.
Yeah.
You only have to look what Mike Jordan's been doing with an old, wise head in a reasonably fast car.
Yeah.
And those sets were the same speed as the Integra 2 years ago. In fact, they are actually aerodynamically better than new Seats, to be honest.
Do you think so?
Oh, yeah, they're much, much better aerodynamically. The problem the Seats got at the moment, and Jason's complaining a lot, is they've got no... It's basically a brick.
No straight line speed.
The old one, if you look at the shape of them, because it's got...
Slippery.
It's got the boot really helps the aero.
Okay.
Let's move on to touring cars on the other side of the world, because Will Davison has been racing in the V8 Supercar Championship, but is set to move to the 2007 Australian GT Championship.
And we care about this because...
Phillip Island. Davison's appearance in round 5 of the GT Championship will be behind the wheel of the FIA GC3 specification Aston Martin DBRS9.
Oh.
Which recently debuted in Australia by owner and regular driver John Kias. Due to overseas commitments, Kias has handed the Aston over to Davison for the Phillip Island event, but it won't be a one-off drive.
Tim, you give me a bit. Will, there are lots of Wills who are American, Australian. So like Will Power, obviously, the man who can actually drive around in the wet, unlike the rest of the champ car teams. Who is Will Davison?
He's a British Formula 3 driver, wasn't he?
Did he run in Team Australia for A1?
He was in Team Australia in the first season of A1, alongside Christian Jones.
If I remember rightly...
Well, ahead of Christian Jones, to be honest.
If I remember rightly, didn't he run in the Jim Beam Racing Falcon as well?
He's currently in the Jim Beam Racing Falcon in V8 Supercars.
They're allowed to have spirit advertising, are they, on their cars?
Yes.
All right.
And was that
NASCAR have spirits advertised?
Yes.
They couldn't have spirits. They could have beer, but not spirits.
No, that was changed because Smirnoff was on for a little while on some of the night races.
Okay.
Can I mention Jim Beam again? Because I like Jim Beam.
Do you want to mention your address? I can send you some.
No, that wouldn't be allowed.
But it is.
But you can mention my address.
It's John Hindoff Wellingborough. He'll get there, don't worry. He's a local legend.
Right, okay. Anything else?
I was obviously at Silverstone.
So was I.
And the Porsche Super Cup.
Can I just say something? I want to say thanks for helping me out at the weekend, Tim. But most importantly, I was a punter for the first time since 1991. Because I took my son on qualifying day. And it's amazing, you see through the thing through completely different eyes. You know, you realise how few places you can go.
Travel through the mud.
How difficult it is to get anywhere, how much walking you have to do, how much local knowledge you need to find a decent viewing position. But when you get there, you know what? Formula 1 cars are really good. It's really exciting.
No, they're not.
They are.
They're not.
We were up at Woodcote and it was absolutely brilliant.
You have your opinion, it just happens to be wrong.
And then, I was something they never did, my son and I went over to Pit Lane Park, which was on B&W Sauber. And we changed tyres, did a tyre change, four and tyre change together, we did some bit of racing control racing, believe it or not.
I mean, he won.
No, he beat me, actually.
Well, good.
There's a reason for it, which I have an excuse.
What, you're rubbish?
No, it's a wrong sort of transmitter, it's a steer wheel rather than But no, it was fabulous, and I never realised that. It's quite a lot of fun going to these things. I was a bit kind of pining for the fjords, and I wanted to get into the paddock.
Here's a question, though. Would you have...
Yes, you'd have VIP pass.
Would you have paid £199 to go and sit in an open grandstand?
No.
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 Okay, can we move on then?
But just to say, if you want to do it, and you want to take a child between about 9 and 13, they will reward you more than £199. Look on their face when Lewis gets pole.
Yes.
Well, you should be emphasising MasterCard. Let's move on then, because Patrick Heisman finished an excellent second in the sixth round of the Mobilience Porsche Super Cup at Silverstone. The number 11 car driver started from third and only had to let go Frenchman Nicolas Armindo.
Wasn't really the big news in the Super Cup, was it, Tim?
The flag fell. Heisman's currently fourth in the championship with 74 points.
Not really the big news, though, is it, Tim?
No, Christian Mentzel was...
That's not the big news either, is it?
So the championship table now
has
Heisman in fourth.
Who's leading?
Richard Westbrook has 89 points. That's five ahead of Uwe Altsen.
He said to me, he's running his season quite good. It's better than poking the eye with a sharp stick. But actually, it's poking the eye with an Italian competitor, wasn't it?
For Westbrook?
Yes.
Yes, or to be honest, it was self-inflicted.
What, because he hit Zampezi and Zampezi poked him in the eye?
I wasn't actually thinking about that. I was thinking more about the fact that...
The world's most stupid penalty I've ever heard of.
The reason he was that far back was because he cheated by taking his own mechanics into Parc Fermé, where, of course, mechanics aren't allowed.
But how's that cheating?
Well, you're not allowed to take mechanics. Mechanics aren't allowed to be in Parc Fermé. So if you have,
why would you take a mechanic?
He gave him a lift back to the paddock.
He drove into Parc Fermé though,
with them in the car. Now, why would you do that?
I don't see the problem with it. Really, what are they going to do?
Well, they
don't know
anything in that.
You don't know. They could have swapped
its way to Parc Fermé.
They could have swapped an ECU.
Conditions.
They could have swapped an ECU.
Actually, I always remember when.
I'm not suggesting for a moment that they did.
No.
But they put themselves in the situation where the finger.
All right. Actually, I didn't read Parc Fermé. The report I had back to the paddock. So fair enough. Parc Fermé is slightly more of a serious thing.
Okay.
So I will be stand correction of being the silliest penalty ever. It's a reasonably silly penalty. But I do remember actually I was speaking to Johnny Mohan years ago when he did some Porsche Super Cup, I think back in 1998 or something. And he was he sat down. And I said, well, how's it going? He said, well, it's all right. Apart from the cars aren't very even. I said, what do you mean? It's what makes sense. He then reeled off about 14 ways in which the teams bent the rules.
Yes, yes.
Down to things like they use different brake fluids and this sort of stuff because it's got a mandated brake fluid and they actually use different brake fluids.
Yeah.
And it's easy.
Suspension mounting.
There you go.
Different ways of mounting the suspension so you can dial more camber into it.
It's
not so bad with the new cars, in fairness. That was with the older cars, the 996s. It's not so bad with the older cars. There's still not very much, you see. In any series where you're not allowed to do very much, people will find a way to do more. If everything is free, then it actually makes life a lot easier. It just means the people with money still.
I must admit, it disappointed me when Joey told me that, because I had kind of thought that it was a relatively pure form of racing. But
I was talking to someone on Sunday who said that because with back-to-back North American races in Canada and the USA, and then coming straight from Manicourt, this being the fourth weekend of racing in 5 weeks,
yep,
the scrutineers were a little bit tired and frankly want to rest and weren't being as thorough as perhaps they might have been.
Nice. Nice.
So, yeah, you got four wheels, that'll do. Off you go.
It's not falling apart, it's not sending out funny smelling, funny coloured smoke.
Right, let's go, move on.
Also in that Porsche Carrera, Porsche Super Cup race were some contenders from the Porsche Carrera Cup GB, James Sutton and Harvey and Stephen Kane. Sutton finished 12th.
How did Fault get on?
No idea.
Don't know, he was qualified 6th.
He qualified 6th, I remember.
I didn't see the race, I saw qualifying on Saturday.
Right. Go on, carry on.
Now Harvey, Sutton and Kane will continue their battle for the Carrera Cup GB title at Donington Park this weekend.
Last race at Donington, so that should guarantee the traffic will go early.
Oliver Jarvis, one of Britain's leading single-seater stars, will make his Porsche Carrera Cup GB debut at Donington Park this weekend in rounds 11 and 12 of the Championship.
Hurrah!
He'll race the Porsche Motorsport entries, part of the strong links between the Carrera Cup and the Autosport McLaren BRDC Young Driver Award. The 23-year-old Cambridge racer won the award in 2005 and went on to finish as runner-up in the 2006 British F3 International Series.
And it is rather well in A1.
Currently, Jarvis is living and racing in Japan as he contests the All Japan for
me. Is he big in Japan?
He is.
Tonight?
He's currently lying second in the point standings in the All Japan Formula 3 Championship.
It's not Benoit Troilier winning, is it?
Benoit Troilier.
I think
it's Troilier.
I was watching a Nippon race, actually, I think on Sky a couple of weeks ago, and it has a selection of people who just never made it in Formula 3000 or F1 test drives. They were kind of easily kind of sharing the win, like that Andre Lotterer, and you think, what's happening to Japanese? There used to be, there's some really good Japanese guys used to be in Nippon.
You right, just read that Porsche Carrera Cup from the UK site, haven't you? That was there.
So it's the press release that was sent to me by Paul Lawrence, thank you, Paul.
Who is the press officer for the UK. And doesn't mention at all Richard Westbrook or Damien Faulkner,
no,
both of whom came up. It only mentions the current people in the championship.
Correct.
It's a bit poor.
For the fifth time this season, the Northern European Cup Formula Renault 2.0 raced in Germany.
Did it?
At the Motorsport Arena Oschersleben, so he's had two rounds on the support bill of the prestigious FIA GT Championship and thrilled to crowd the bumper grid of 30 cars, the largest entry of all categories that raced at Oschersleben last weekend. Frank Casilli and Ricky Christodoulou were the winners of the two races.
All right, so he's getting a bit of extra mileage, is he? They got some mileage, Christodoulou, didn't they?
Well, in fact, the whole of the Fortec Motorsport team went there.
Right.
With Richard Dutton. Duncan Tappy was third in race one place ahead of Yuichi Yamamoto.
Why do I know him?
Because he also races for Fortec in the Formula Renault UK Championship.
I thought he was one of the Germans.
So you might have heard of him before.
I have heard of him.
In race two, Ricky Christodoulou took his first win of the season.
Well done, Ricky.
And set the fastest lap.
Well done, Ricky.
He finished 2.840
finished
ahead of the second place car. Who was third? Oh, it's Valtteri Bottas.
Can I just mention that Damien Faulkner was the top British finisher? Actually, that's
not
terrible.
British.
He's not British. I've just realised he's got a British flag next to him on the Super Cup site.
That's the race. It's
British license.
It's the racing license.
Lechner Racing Team Bahrain.
It's what they were doing with Le Mans on the TV coverage as well, John. They had Nick Manassian had a British flag next to him.
James Sutton, in fact, was the first British finisher.
Yes.
And he finished in 12.
As I said, some 5 minutes.
You did actually, Tim. I had to back up on this one.
Tappy started from the back of the grid after an engine failure in qualifying.
That's rare.
11th. Yes, it is rare, isn't it?
I don't think I've ever heard of engine failure in Renault.
So the current championship points in this series
are not
four
very
rounds. Kishele leads with 114, then Tobias Hegervald in 80 1 point. Valtteri Bottas on 77, Stefan Müller 54, as is Nicky Katzberg. Ollie Oakes is on 45.
His career has disappeared very quickly, hasn't it? World karting champion, next big thing.
Fabio Anidi, 38. Romano Zarut on 30.
Fabio Anidi was the graduate cup champion last year, wasn't he?
Yes, and Dennis.
See, look, I'm just proving I have been concentrating whilst covering the races.
38. Not this year, obviously, if you had never heard of Yuichi Yamamoto.
No, I had heard him. I couldn't think where, though.
Yeah,
do you know why, though? Because Yamamoto is, of course, one of the names in the Japanese team in Grand Prix.
No, in fact, he is Mr. Yamamoto. It's supposed to be Mr. Honda.
Mr. Yamamoto, yeah.
Did you watch it when it was on the telly the other night?
No, I've got the DVD, the remastered DVD.
Can I borrow that?
It's fabulous. Yes, you can.
Next time you come over.
Because I also obviously got Grand Prix with Steve McQueen a couple of weeks ago after doing Le Mans. You said Grand Prix, Le Mans with Steve McQueen after doing it.
It's not as good a DVD though. There's not as many extras.
No, the DVD is complete. It's just the film. They need to.
While they're talking, I'll continue and tell you that Carlo Van Damme did himself a huge favour at the Nürburgring by finishing second and third at round four of the ATS Formula 3 Cup. The championship leader set the fastest lap during race one and took pole position for the second race in the title race. Van Damme increased his leading position with 68 points after 8 races. Now also heads the Rookie Cup with 65 points.
And come on, Tim. I'd also like to get a copy of Winning with Paul Newman. I tried doing that and I haven't been able to find it.
I think I've got
Winning.
That on VHS somewhere. I think it's just come back.
Frederick Verwisch is second, Nico Vidonk third, Ricardo Bruin Troy is fourth. Performance car fans are getting ready for a mammoth event after one of the automotive industry's biggest online communities, pistonheads.com, or as it says in their first release, peasonheads.com.
And who are they owned by now?
Haymarket. Announced plans to stage the Ultimate Supercar Show. Raymond Exotic Sports.
Well, they've got to do something now since they lost the looking after the British Motor Show.
Yeah, but
it's Piston Head Show, which will run parallel to Autosport International, the world's biggest motorsport show at the National Exhibition Centre in Birmingham next January. This will be the first ever Piston Heads of Performance Car Show, and more than 25,000 sports car fans are expected to attend for features including a concept car gallery, supercar paddock, track car days, performance used cars, and a car market. It's teamed up with Auto Car Magazine.
Well done.
Haymarket. Haymarket events. Haymarket promotion.
Well done, Bernard Cottrell and Haymarket events for coming up with another great idea to make the show even bigger.
Well, at least it might be themed, because one thing I said they always put the show is, I actually really like the show, especially if it had gone on Thursday with no one there, but it is a bit confusing where there's no real kind of lineage. You want to look for it. Some of the new cars in one place, some new cars in others, and the tyres in one place, and the teams. I think they actually did theme it, so it was, you know, single season sports car, clubman racing, road car, supercar would be, I think, a much better thing. To be honest, make it much easier to navigate yourself around it when you're looking for certain things.
They do kind of do that though, because they have a constructors pavilion, they have a karting area, they have a national area.
They have an engineering area,
which is one of the weekends, in fairness.
No, it doesn't. And they came. They had an RC demonstration last year, as well.
They said the student area, didn't they?
They did have a student area. That was excellent last
year. Yeah, everyone was asleep.
I was tremendously impressed with that, particularly when the guys from research and development at Jaguar threw out a challenge to the students of the country to do this drag racing powered by little gas canisters.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And to do a saloon car or GT car version rather than the normal just sort of little drag race or Formula One type cars. And they had built a very, very pretty and very highly engineered scale replica of XK8. And it was soundly thrashed by pretty much every one of the students' cars.
And your surprise, given Jaguar's current performance?
And how horrible the new XK8 is, do you mean? All right, let's carry on.
No, that's it.
Are you sure?
The news is over.
Oh, no.
All the week's motorsport news. Midweek Motorsport on Globecast Radio.
Stop, whoa, yes, wait a minute, this is supposed to be.
Wait. Now, you see, he doesn't tell me what he's going to do with all this music, does Tim Greer? That can only mean it's time for the letters page. Is that right?
For the letters page.
Cheese, mate. We love it. We love cheese. That's fantastic. Lots. Can we have an instrumental version for next week, please?
I'll work on it. Okay. You should have reminded me, of course. You promised on last week's show that you'd call me on Tuesday and remind me of the music for the letters page. You didn't do that, so I remembered early this afternoon and had to phone someone to another radio station and get them to send it to us.
Very good. Very well done. I was channeling it to you, though, clearly. So the letters page.
Lots of them, you say?
Yeah, lots.
Is your sack bulging?
My sack is bulging and it needs to be emptied. So let's do that right now. Studio at 0157.org. Simon Ashton says, thanks very much. Love the show. Would prefer a bit more rallying, though. Why not get someone to give news on the Ancro and BTRDA series? I think we can do that, can't we, Tim, Mr. Producer?
Rallying's dull. You need to have Gwyndaf Evans in a giant clock.
Yeah, okay. Ian Pipe says... Ian Pipe doesn't say anything. David Harvey in Leighton Buzzard says, thanks for continuing to enlighten and entertain. Waiting for the latest on Stepney Gate. Can't trust the weekly mags. Well, hope you enjoyed what Nick had to say earlier on in the programme, David, and keep the emails coming in. Now, listen to this. This is dedication, Tim. Recently flew to San Francisco for work, and rather than watch boring films that I wasn't really interested in, I listened to all the night hours of Radio Le Mans I missed whilst I was there due to the need to sleep. Excellent. Keep up the good work. And says, looking forward to ALMS NASCAR doubleheader in the autumn, which is Petit Le Mans, then Charlotte, of course. Let's just hope we can get Astons and Peugeots at PLM. We were talking about this at the weekend, if you were listening, actually, David, and I'm not sure that either Peugeot, who want to come, and Aston, who desperately wants to come, are going to be a Petit Le Mans. However, we have got a GT3 Viper in the field this weekend, and I'm reliably informed that there'll be an MC12 Maserati before Petit, so that should be in the field, and possibly also a GT2 Ford GT, is what I heard at the weekend, as well. Our Eastern European correspondent, Emilian Stoichkov, emails in and says, I'm keen to hear Nick's thoughts on the whole spy scandal. I'm trying to keep up with what's going on. Always pretty hard to keep up. I'm trying to catch the stuff live, but work keeps getting in the way. So keep up the good work with all of the replays. Is Lime Rock up and ready, the race? He says he's trying to stay out of the way of the result. I don't think we've mentioned it tonight. Lime Rock's up on the 0157.org page now, Tim, is it?
It is, and on the 0157.org Globecast Radio podcast.
Right, okay. And a bit of a request. Whenever you have some time to kill on the show, why don't you invite Sam Collins again? He may sound insane, but some of his thoughts are very provocative. He and John could make for a very fun ESPN-style talk show, and with the hosts always disagree. Listen to last week's show, I would say, a million. In your catch-up, you'll find out what Sam had to say. And that has, in fact, provoked a couple of the following letters, including this from Chris James in Rawton in Wiltshire. Says, an interesting debate last Wednesday. I've thought of a couple of team owners who could be considered for a new formula on spent cooking fat, and you're going to like these. How about Chip Ganassi? Very good. Gerhard Berger. And Bappi Gabbiani. Relish the thought, he says. Very good. When you were talking about motorsport against the clock, I was surprised that Nick didn't appreciate rallying, because the oldest format of against the clock racing in Britain is hill climbing. Good point, of course. And a quick plug for a 2-day race meeting at Castle Coombe this weekend, 14th and 15th of July, Brit Cars and Formula Palmer Audi among the highlights. Yes, and Brit Car 24 hours.
Some people would say, what are the low lights?
I don't think there's any low lights there, to be honest.
Palmer Audi.
Well, you know, it's always a bit of a crash fest, isn't it? There's plenty to talk about. The Brit Car 20.
I watched Formula Palmer Audi on Motors TV this week.
And?
That was only because it was the A1 GP support race and I was there and I wanted to see if I could spot myself in the crowd.
You are a very sad man. Brit Car 24 live here on Globecast again this year. We've already been talking to James Tucker and news of a competition that could see you going there as a guest of the organisers and Globecast in the next few weeks.
We've got a big competition on tonight's show as well.
Well, no, I'm not talking about that now. It's secret. And this from Lane Perry. Audi started 3 cars at Le Mans, finished 1. Started 2 cars at Lime Rock, really only finished 1. Yes, I agree with that. You know, getting toward on a flatbed to the pits and then coming back out again is a bit against the spirit. Maybe this will help convince Audi to sell some R10s.
Did the same in the IRL though, didn't they?
Yeah, but that's not an endurance series, is it? You know?
Two and three quarter hours isn't really endurance.
No, I know, but it's, you know, ACO rules say outside assistance, you're out. Maybe this will help convince Audi to sell some R10s to privateers, Champion Racing, etc., to ensure a car finishes. Not a bad point, Lane, to be honest. Of course, don't forget that most of Champion Racing at the moment are being Audi Sport North America Truth in Engineering, which is the full title of their team. So Dave Mirage, Brad Kettler, Mike Peters, and most of the faces that you would have seen in Champion shirts are now in Audi Sport North America shirts, and well, they deserve that recognition, to be honest. And finally, for this week's letters page, Doug Werner, and I've got some more of these from Doug. I'm sorry, but I'm travelling this week, so I don't have enough time to compose something thoughtful, you might say. I never have. No, Doug, never. This week, I only have time for questions. You guys are the pros. What are the answers? And I will throw this out to our audience as well. On Sam Collins last week, how many natural resources are wasting growing corn to turn into ethanol? If it is replenishable, is that really better? Surely the best biofuel is the one that converts used bioproducts into fuel. Isn't that biodiesel? How much more cutting edge would F1 be if the cars were electric and the horse racing circuits had to provide power certified to be either hydroelectric, solar, wind or nuclear? How much progress would be made in battery, ultra-capacitor technology, materials, packaging, charging rates, capacity rate, discharge speed, and most importantly, safety, if the F1 guys were on it?
Hydrogen, it's a way forward.
Is right, yeah. Well, there you go. How much trickle-down technology would there be from everything from electric cars and hybrids to cell phones? Couldn't the F1 of the future be the ground-based equivalent of the space programs of the 60s and 70s? If one man could power...
Swallowing larger chunks of public money, you mean?
Well, no, it doesn't have to swallow. You see, that, I think that's what he's saying. It doesn't have to swallow public money because there's so much private money going into it. If one man can power a DeLorean with a banana peel and a fusion reactor, certainly all the F1 resources, money, manpower and brains could accomplish something beyond defining the limits of CFD.
Could I just point out that Back to the Future was a work of fiction?
Yeah, he's been ironic there, you know.
Mm.
I do agree with them on a lot of that, to be honest. And we've got more thoughts from Doug and questions that we'll, I think will slot into the American portion, because he's got some very, very pointed questions to ask of IRL, Champ Car and indeed ALMS from the weekend. So that's the letters page for this week. Play the music, Tim.
No, you've had enough of that, so to say.
In that case, I'll just take the time to remind you, it's studio at 0157. Have a rant, make a comment, ask a question. Studio at 0157.org. And whether it's something on tonight's programme, something you saw at the weekend, or something that catches your eye this weekend in the world of motorsport, studio at 0157.org for our letters page. And you never know, we might be reading out your question, rant, or observation this time next week.
We fill our airtime with news about cars. We go on the road to give you honest feedback. We're trackside and on the stages to bring you news as it happens and results. Globecast Radio. Love cars. Love motorsport. Love music. The Globecast Radio channel, home of live sports coverage, where it just keeps on coming.
Well, as I tend to say at this time every week, there's the first hour of the programme done and dusted. But not to worry, we've still got another one to come, another hour, that is. And in the next 60 minutes, we'll be talking to Declan Brennan. He's had his ear on the ovals this week, although he possibly could have been better employed watching the WWF. Fisticuffs, but some good racing too to talk about with Declan later on tonight's show. Now, cast your mind back a couple of weeks, dear listener. We tried to speak to UK Formula Renault driver Will Bratt. For a number of reasons, mostly down to bad telecommunications, we failed miserably. Fingers crossed, we're going to give it another go, and hopefully he'll be on the show in the next hour as well. But when we come back, we're going to give you a chance to be a winner. Remember all our competitions last week? Well, we've got a new one this week. And that's next, here on Midweek Motorsports.
the Globecast Radio channel, home of live sports coverage, where it just keeps on coming.
It's Midweek Motorsport. I'm John Hindorf, live from the lounge in Wellingborough and in Globecast Towers. It is Tim Gray. Hello again, Tim.
Hello once again.
Well, that was a very... Hello. Oh, you got the processing on there. Very good indeed. Now, this next part of the programme I know very little about because Tim's keeping it a big secret. All I know that it's a competition and it's something to do with the Silverstone Classic meeting. Tim, what have you got for our listener?
It is a competition.
Mm-hmm.
The prize is a pair of tickets to go to the Silverstone Classic meeting.
Which is the end of the month, isn't it?
It's the 27th to 29th of July.
Mm-hmm.
It's at Silverstone in Northamptonshire.
And it's a classic.
And it's a classic.
Actually, it's fast becoming one of the must-go-to events of the summer season, along with the Grand Prix and various bits and pieces.
Along with the Grand Prix, you won't be going this year?
No, because I'm away at Snetterton. I am in that 200-mile-long cul-de-sac that's called the County of East Anglia, or the region of East Anglia. I'll be there for touring cars.
You went to the Classic 2 years ago, didn't you?
I think it was longer ago than that. In fact, it's so long ago it's changed sponsors twice since the last time I was there. A tremendous meeting, just a wonderful array of cars, of course. And really the cars should be the stars, but when you see the sort of people that turns up like Stirling Moss and, you know, Norman Jewis from Jaguar normally puts in an appearance, Sir Jackie Stewart, of course, the... role of honour, if you like.
Stirling Moss, if you're going to be like that.
Well, yes, absolutely, Sir Stirling Moss.
Jack Brabham.
Will he be there this year?
He usually is.
Yeah, good man. Black Jack there. It's just absolutely... The Knights of Motorsport coming together then, along with their former steeds at Silverstone at the end of the month, and you could be going courtesy of Silverstone Classic Meeting and Midweek Motorsport. A couple of tickets up for grabs. All you've got to do is answer this fiendishly cunning question set by Quizmaster Tim Gray.
We could almost get someone to play Call My Huff for this, couldn't we? But we'll make it a little bit simpler than that.
Right.
You just have to answer this simple question.
Okay.
Which of these manufacturers is Italian?
Okay.
A. Alfa Romeo.
Right.
B. Bentley.
Yeah.
Or C. Citroen.
A. Alfa Romeo, B. Bentley,
or C. Citroen.
Right, okay. Those are your three choices. We'd like you to text the word...
Globecast.
And your answer, either A, B and C, to...
60300.
And text will cost...
50 pence, plus network charges.
So, text the word Globecast and your answer A, B or C... remember, we want to know which of these car manufacturers are Italian. Is it A, Alfa Romeo, B, Bentley or C, Citroen? A, B or C, put your name on there as well. Go on, be sociable. It'll cost you 50p, your network charges may apply, and of course, the winners will be drawn at random for a chance to get those two tickets for the Silverstone Classic meeting, which is later on, right at the end of this month. And if you didn't quite get all the details of that, don't worry, because we'll reset that before the end of tonight's programme. Dead easy, really, isn't it?
All the results from motorsport all over the world. And the interviews in one place. Globecast Radio. Because like us, you love your cars and motorsport.
It's John Hindorf and Tim Gray on Midweek Motorsport. Welcome along if you have just joined us. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we tried to get this young man on the telephone, but for a number of telecommunications-related reasons, we couldn't quite get it done. However, tonight, I think we've mastered the technology, and we can say hello and welcome to the show to Will Bratt. Hello, Will.
Hello.
Ah, good. Fantastic. And nice and clear as well. Now, Will's been... you've been having a pretty good opening to the Formula Renault UK season. What is it? Is it three out of the last four you've won, Will?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You've got to be delighted about that, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We've really shown some genuine pace recently. We didn't do too well on the first couple of rounds, but, you know, recently, the last two races, we've been really quick. We've taken three wins out of four races, so... Yeah, definitely very pleased.
Now, you're one of the drivers, one of the increasing number of drivers that we see in British motorsport at the moment who graduated up from... You came up from T-Cars, didn't you?
Yeah, I did three seasons in T-Cars, kind of two and a half years, really. T cars, I was doing karting. And I went into T cars when I was 14. And won a championship in 2004, I think.
Yeah, it was, yeah, four.
Yeah.
Now, that was an interesting decision because clearly you've gone on to single-seater Formula, so clearly you believe that's where your future is. It's not as if you went into T-cars because you thought you might end up in touring cars, although that may still be an option for you. So what was the decision then? You were 14, you were doing relatively well in karting, to make what is really quite a big jump into T-cars and do something at 14 that maybe was a bit of a gang, maybe was a bit of a gamble?
Well, really, I wasn't getting on that well in karting at that time. I think I'm quite tall, so physically I wasn't really cut out to do karting.
Okay.
And also on top of that, I wanted to get involved in actually doing full-scale circuit racing. And I always wanted to go in single-seaters, but you've got to remember that T-cars, although they're saloon cars, they're not really proper saloon cars. They're a space frame chassis, like similar to a NASCAR, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a lot of characteristics that are similar to single-seaters. But I mean, really, probably the main motivation was just, the desire to get onto actual full-size circuits and start proper car racing.
And do you feel it's helped you in the next parts of your career that you were able to take some circuit knowledge into the Formula that you've raced in since then?
Yeah, definitely. It's all experience. I mean, but I remember I spent 2.5-3 years on full circuits. Although the cars weren't single seaters, it's still good experience. So you've got to say that where I am now, you've got to say that everything I've done up to this point has been experience and it's helped me. And I think the T-Car Championship was very good for helping me develop my driving and get accustomed to full circuits and what it's all about.
And I suppose getting the grips with the gearbox in T-Cars and, healing and towing and all that sort of stuff, that couldn't have been wasted time either.
Definitely not. It did take a bit of getting used to, because they're not the easiest cars to drive in the world.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's got to have helped.
So let's get back to this season. You're with Team Apotec, Apotec UK, who have really come on form with you, I think, this season. Mm-hmm. They've really matured, which is good because we're used so much to see one or two teams dominating these national single-seater championships that this is a bit of a challenge, isn't it?
If you take like a Formula One equivalent, it's maybe like seeing a team like Red Bull.
Yeah.
Coming through and challenging Ferrari and McLaren. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely refreshing to see. And it is a one-make championship, though.
Mm.
So there shouldn't really be a situation where a few teams dominate. And certainly my team knows what they're doing. Although, maybe we haven't had success in the past, and you could say that they're a less experienced team than maybe Fortec or Manor, who've won a lot of championships in the past. But I mean, we've definitely shown now that we've got the potential to win the championship.
Do you think it's important, and it's been part of the reason for the success, that you and Apotec Scorpio, in whatever guise it has been over the years, you've been together quite a long time with this team, haven't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say it's quite important. I've built a good relationship with the team members. And then last year we brought Apotec on board to provide support for us, and they've been fantastic. And certainly the fact that I'm in my third year with the same team, is helpful because you build up a relationship with engineers and, you both get to know each other and you both work better as a team. It has been helpful.
So you really are the man to beat at the moment, mate. I'm sorry about that. Put a bit of pressure on you. We go to Donington Park at the weekend on my favourite configuration, the shorter of the two circuits. Yeah. I do think that's the best of the two configurations that we run at Donington Park. You must have high hopes for that again.
Yeah, certainly. I'm hoping I can win both the races like we did at Croft. We've been reasonably successful at Donington in the past. Had a podium last year. And it's circuit I like, and it's a circuit I think we've got a good setup for. So we'll just have to wait and see how it goes, but you know, I think we can do a pretty good job.
It's such a competitive championship. I'm really impressed that you've had such a run of victories, because that's not the norm. You might see somebody win a race, or you know, win a one race in the weekend and then one race the next weekend, but to have strung what three together as you did, and to have done them particularly at Oulton Park in the manner in which you won, which was fairly dominating, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Would you have preferred to have a bit more competition, or are you very happy to be out there on your own?
No, I'm very happy to be out there on my own.
Good lad, good lad. I suppose that's the first job of a racing driver, is to disappear off in the distance and make it look as easy as possible, is it?
Well, the first job of a racing driver is to win, whether it looks easy or not. And you could say, oh, it might be nicer to win, you know, with a large amount of competition to make the races more interesting. But winning is winning.
You took your debut win at Oulton last year, didn't you?
Yeah.
That's a big step, isn't it? In any, whenever you go to a new category, to get that first win under your belt's really important.
Yeah. Psychologically, it gives you the confidence, and you know, you could go into a class and not have a win, but still believe that you can get that win. But you know, until you actually get the win, it's you know, slightly different. We had a pretty tough time towards the end of last year, for a number of reasons. But certainly the win at Oulton gave everybody in the team a lot of confidence, and you know, boosted myself. So yeah, it was helpful.
A hard question for you perhaps to answer here, but given the last few results, given the fact that we're only really halfway through the season, do you dare think that the championship title might now be a possibility for you, Will?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely a possibility. We're fourth at the moment. We've got a little bit of catching up to do on the guys at the front. But then again, we don't have any points to drop from them, because I've got zero scores in two races now.
You should explain to our listeners just how the point system works in Formula Renault UK, because you actually, is it two, your worst two scores you drop?
Yeah, you're allowed to drop your two worst scores. So if you, say, won every race and didn't finish in two, then you could drop the two you didn't finish and you'd end up with maximum points.
Yeah. So some of the guys who you ahead of you have got, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth place finishes to take into account, in their points tally at the moment. That's one of the reasons on TV, actually, we don't show the points tally for your race, because it's too difficult to work out. So you actually couldn't, you're not in a bad position sitting in fourth position at the moment, are you?
No, not at all. You know, we're about halfway through the season, and you know, there's a lot of races still to go, and I could still definitely win a championship.
Donington, as we said, short circuit at the weekend, and you go back there later in the year for the Renault, what is it, the Renault Festival, effectively.
Yeah.
Now, do you race on the long circuit when you go on that one?
Yeah, we do, yeah.
And how do you like that?
I don't mind either, to be honest. I'd probably say I prefer the short one, because it kind of keeps the flow of the circuit up.
I agree.
The long one, it's longer, but you've got a couple of kind of slower chicanes there and the hairpins, and it kind of breaks up the flow of the circuit.
And this weekend, of course, it looks like we might have some difficult conditions. That didn't seem to bother you at all at Oulton Park a couple of weeks ago. You don't clearly don't mind the rain?
No, not at all. You know, if we do have difficult conditions, then I'd look forward to it. You know, it mixes the grid up a bit. It allows, you know, if maybe if you aren't quite the quickest car on the day, it allows you to drive around that.
How difficult are these cars to drive normally, and indeed in the wet? I mean, they are probably the quickest cars on their day. They're probably the quickest cars on the touring car package, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, I think we're definitely the quickest cars on the package. In terms of being difficult to drive, they're fairly spiteful. If you're not careful, they can spin you out very easily.
I like that, spiteful. I like it. That's a great adjective. I'll be using that at the weekend and crediting you for that. Is it? Are they sort of just one step away from Formula 3? Do they have a little bit more grip than they have power, or is there still just a bit more power than grip?
They tend to move around quite a lot. I think Raikkonen, when he went to test Formula 1 and he came back into Formula Renault, he commented on how much the Formula Renault car moved around.
Mm.
And I would expect a Formula 3 car to move around less.
Mm.
Because they got more aerodynamics. But then again, they got more power. I've never driven one, so I wouldn't know. But
I'm sure it won't be long. That brings me to my next question. Is what is your next step? I mean, are you already? I know we're only halfway through this season, but seasons come and go very quickly. Are we already planning for next year? And if so, would it be another year in Renault? Are you looking further afield?
I'm looking further afield at the moment. We're considering a lot of different things, just leaving options open.
Mm-hmm.
Formula 3, even up to, you know, Formula 3000 level World Series or GP2.
Mm.
But to be honest, at the moment we're halfway through the season and my main aim is to have a go at the Renault Championship.
Is it difficult for you to balance this, you know, proper full-on racing career that you've got at the moment with your studies? I believe you're at university at Oxford, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. At the moment, it's not very difficult at all because I'm on my holiday.
Of course.
Stupid
question by Hind off there, punished mercilessly by Brat and thoroughly deserved, thank you.
No, in term time, it can get difficult at points. If there's, say, exams at university, if you're kind of working up to something at university and then you've got a race at the same time, you can feel pretty hard-pressed. Like, for example, Alton, last time out, I missed the test session. So I actually went into qualifying with no previous running on the track that weekend.
Oh, wow. And that was purely because of commitments with your studies, was it?
Yeah, I had my end-of-year exams. We tried to get university to put them off, but couldn't.
Which you can see their point of view as well, I'm sure. Yeah. What are you studying at the moment, Will?
History.
Ah. And where is that taking you? I mean, are you convinced that your future is as a professional racing driver? And if not, what's the other plan?
At the moment, I'm convinced my future is as a professional racing driver. But it seems wasteful now to drop the university course when I spent a lot of effort getting into Oxford in the first place. And, you know, it's quite an achievement.
And what's that experience been like?
Building.
Yeah.
It's been difficult times, but, you know, I think it's been a good experience.
And what year are you in at the moment? How far through your studies?
My first year.
Right, okay. So it's going to only get harder from here, of course.
Yeah,
you know that, don't you?
Yeah, I've got two more.
Now, what would, and again, perhaps this is rather a difficult question, how is it going to work if, you know, let's say you progress to an international formula, quite clearly it's going to be more and more difficult to balance your studies. If and when there comes a time that you have to make a decision between your studies and your motor racing, which way do you feel it would have to go?
Myself, I feel I'd have to go with the road racing, to be honest.
Yeah?
Because you can, I can always come back to university.
True.
Whereas racing as a career is something you've got to keep up momentum in it.
Mm.
And it's where my heart is. It's what I want to do. At the end of the day, I mean, I think if I got a good degree at university, and then a good job, I'd only, you know, use anything I got out of that to put back into motorsport.
That's a great answer. I hope it doesn't come to that, Will, and I hope that you're able to juggle the various parts of your life. It's such a delight to speak to one of our young British driving talents who is still plugging away hard with his studies. Wish you all the best at the weekend, mate. See you up there at Donington, and have a great season as well, won't you?
Every week we bring you all the motorsport news wherever in the world.
Midweek Motorsport,
the international motorsport magazine on radio.
Low cost radio.
Coming up in a few moments, Declan Brennan has his eye on the ovals, or his ear on the ovals. He's had his eye on a
bit of a boxing match that went on last week. That's coming up in a few moments' time. However, let's just remind you of our Midweek Motorsport competition for two tickets to the Silverstone Classic, which is at the end of the month, and all you have to do is answer the following question. We'd like to know which of the following three car manufacturers are Italian. Is it answer A, Alfa Romeo, answer B, Bentley, or answer C, Citroen? Text the word GLOBECAST, GLOBECAST, plus the letter corresponding to the manufacturer of your choice, either A, B, or C, plus your name as well, please, to 60300. That's 60300. It'll cost you 50p, and network charges may apply. So, which of the following manufacturers are Italian? It's A, Alfa Romeo, B, Bentley, C, Citroen. Text your answer, please, to GLOBECAST, then your answer, then your name, 60300. It'll cost you 50p, and network charges may apply. But don't forget, you might be the lucky winner and get two tickets, courtesy of Silverstone Classic and Midweek Motorsport.
Every week, we bring you all the motorsport news, wherever in the world.
Midweek Motorsport.
The international motorsport magazine on radio.
GLOBECAST Radio. GLOBECAST Radio.
News from across the pond. If it happens over there, hear about it over here on Midweek Motorsport.
Welcome back to the show. Our ear on the ovals, Declan Brennan. Hello, Dex.
Ah, how are you? It seems ages since I've seen you, or is it only a couple of days?
It is, in fact, only a couple of days, isn't it?
I was your chauffeur for the weekend, wasn't I?
Yeah, on the golf cart, yeah. And frankly, I think you should never have anything more powerful. Actually, that suited you down to the ground, mate. You were outstanding on that.
I'm saying that. You've said that for a long time. And it is something that we really need to establish some sort of one-make championship for.
Golf cart.
Yeah. Seeing as we got a little bit of a chance to get out onto the track out there.
I think you should do the same with Kent Sweepers.
With road sweepers. Very good.
Kent Sweepers, does he not play for the Seattle Mariners? Sorry, carry on.
You know, I'll tell you one thing, though. This flying through the daytime back from America, I jumped on the early flight on Sunday morning from JFK, and it's fantastic. I need to do more of it because I really didn't feel jet lag at all this week. I don't feel like I've been away almost. It's just like, oh, and here I am back in the UK, and a moment ago, two meals ago and a couple of movies ago, I was in the States. It's mega.
Yeah, because that's the one that lands at about 8 p.m., isn't it? And,
yes.
And you're sort of tired from the travel and the rushing around, and you're perfect to get home. But the time you get home, you're tired enough to, yep, I know.
To go to bed at the right time, yes,
exactly. Absolutely, yes. I've done that one many, many, many times.
And very well worthwhile getting up at 12:30 in New York on Sunday morning. Anyway, travelling is not what we're talking about. Here on the ovals are. Where do you want to start, Dex? There's so much to talk about.
Let's start literally with an ear on the ovals.
Right.
Which, Jamie McMurray wins his second race in 5 years, and, you know, he takes the bull by the horns and actually wins a big one. He won the Pepsi 400.
Yep.
But I think the key to his victory was utter ignorance of how many laps were left. He sheepishly admitted afterwards in an interview that he asked how many were there to go when there was a restart with five to go, but he sort of lost count and wasn't really sure where he was when he crossed the line 0.005 of a second ahead of Kyle Busch.
And you know what? If that finish line had been 50 feet down towards turn 4 or 10 feet down towards turn 1, Kyle Busch would have won that.
Yes, but there's another explanation as to why Kyle Busch didn't win it. It's because he's not very popular at all with his teammates. Ergo, nobody was willing to give him that little push to get him that little bit ahead. But unlike Jamie McMurray, who Kyle Edwards sacrificed all chances of victory. Kyle Edwards said afterwards, could have gone around the outside, possibly with a chance of victory. Now I decided I'd give him the push, and it worked.
Do you know, but seriously though, it looked like Busch had that won right up to the line.
Oh, yeah.
It looked like he had it won after the line. There was only about 3 feet, the last of which seemed to be, the last inch of which seemed to be the line itself, where McMurray was actually ahead.
It is. I've looked at it. I still have it on TiVo, and I've looked at it several times, and it's very difficult to work out how. But
I thought he bumped him, actually, when I first watched it live, and then I realised he hadn't. It was absolutely clean. Great stuff. And my mate, Jamie McMurray, who I've won money on at Daytona before.
Absolutely, but in slightly different circumstances, actually doing his job that he hasn't managed to do for 5 years. The fact that he's still in a job after 5 years of not delivering is he's a classic case of somebody who over-promised and then under-delivered for 5 years. He won early in his career, and everybody's, oh, that's great. Oh, he's another one of this new generation of great young drivers. And up to now, he's been most famous for carrying a small bunny around in a TV commercial for Nextel. And I think, and we'll leave it at, before we go into look at the point standings, just to say that right now, if you base this on the interviews that have been done after the races by a number of people, Kyle Busch is definitely winning the Justin Keane Award for popularity.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Now, we have to say about that bad luck to Boris said, because he looked like he was going to be on pole for that race until the last, 12 cars?
There were 14 cars left in the car, and you know what, and it's been discussed, and I've been thinking about this since. In the past, there is precedent for this. In the past, NASCAR have waited when they've got space on the following day to run the remainder of qualifying.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't do it, they chose not to, which... For those of you who may not be aware, basically, the top 35 and people with provisionals get locked in if a race... basically, the grid goes in order of point standings if the race qualifying is not completed. So with 14 laps to go, the rains came when good old Boris, a big hero of ours, somebody we love very much, was on pole, looking to be on pole for the second year in a row at the Pepsi 400.
Unbelievable.
And... qualifying was cancelled, and we happened to be sitting at a bar, were we not, when he came on to discuss the fact that he wasn't going to make the race.
We were just passing the bar and saw Boris on and dived in to see what he was saying, in fairness. It's not as if we'd been sitting there for hours. Oh, yes, okay, we had been.
But yes, he was very, very magnanimous.
So he didn't get in the race then?
No, not at all. No, because his points, where he lies in the championship, don't put him into the race.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
I mean, surely there must be fingers being pointed at NASCAR that it was one of the, you know, the non-regulars that was on pole. You know, if that had been Dale Earnhardt Jr. on pole position by half a second, you know that they would have come back the next morning and qualified.
You're absolutely right. Well, obviously, we don't know that for certain, but I'm speculating. You get the feeling that's what they would have done. And unfortunately, over the weekend, we had a situation where two major American championships totally took their eye off the ball when it came to rain affecting their qualifying.
Yes, because the other one, I'm afraid, was the American Le Mans Series, wasn't it?
Yes.
We were there.
And we were robbed of, unlike in NASCAR where you'll never, because it's one-shot qualifying, but we were robbed of the drawing track scenario, which all other racing series have had to deal with in the past, qualifying on a drawing track.
Last one across the line on pole.
Yes, absolutely. It would have been fantastic. It would have been absolutely fantastic. And, I mean, we were robbed of it, unfortunately, which is a shame. But you're absolutely right. Well, getting back to the main, the substantive point here, which is, yeah, if Junior in his Stars and Stripes Budweiser livery had qualified on pole and then they had to wipe it, yeah, I think there may have been something slightly different that may have happened in the NASCAR trailer behind pit lane.
Yes, because if the rules had been reversed and the last 14 to qualify had included people like Boris said, they'll have been told to come back the next day.
Absolutely.
Mm.
Of course not.
Yes, moving on then.
Really, really just moves this thing, which again, it gives an excuse to talk a little bit about the American Le Mans Series. News just in, sort of, it's dropped into my inbox.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that Thomas Enge, has teamed up with Sanax Motorsport basically to act as a driver coach for Milka Duno. He's going to set the car up for her at Nashville this weekend. And which is sort of sad, and it's basically an admission that she's a little bit out of her depth, and it's sad in a way because part of me thinks, well, why don't you just put Thomas in the car because he's absolutely fantastic. And anybody who sat on Saturday morning in qualifying at the chicane at Lime Rock to see him literally make the car fly through it, straight lining a chicane that shouldn't be straight lined by anybody on his flying lap, his quickest lap, the lap that gave him pole in GT2, knows how good this guy is. And I'm delighted that he's sort of still sniffing around and he's in and around the single seater drive, but it seems unfortunate that A, he can't get one, and B, that he's limited to being a coach of the inept.
Well, don't forget Andy Wallace did that when she was racing in Grand Am and basically set the car up and went out, and that was how she got her victories.
But
in fact, somebody rather unkindly said of her in one of the first of the oval races, she came into the pits and got out, and it was only when she got out she realised that there wasn't Andy Wallace to hand over to and had to get back in and complete the race herself.
Coach to the inept, of course, applies to your friend Simon Hill as well, doesn't it, John? Because he's been asked by several backmarkers in major championships to try and improve their...
I thought you were going to say he took you around Rockingham in a Porsche Boxster S once.
No, he didn't. He didn't take me around that.
No, he took me.
He took you, yeah.
Well, actually, I took him. Scared the life out of him, I think. Yes, absolutely. Simon's been doing a great job. Kelvin Burt does the similar thing. In fact, most of the decent drivers that I know, add Warren Hughes to that at one stage or another, has went and helped out with some driver coaching.
John, Tony Canaan's had to do it for Marco and Mrs. Hospital.
Well, I want to talk about that later on, because one of our letters that we got this week poses some interesting questions on...
Does that mean we can have the letter music
front
again?
Shall we move on to IRL then?
We are sort of talking about IRL anyway.
Yes, let's do that and we'll have the letters music again then.
Wait a minute,
this is
postman. Wait,
this is
postman.
So
you are kidding me.
Fantastic, isn't it? That is cheese of the finest order.
But they are responsible for the greatest guitar solo in the history of pop music in Goodbye to Love. So they can be forgiven. They can be forgiven everything.
I think there's a few Eric Clapton fans, Mark Knopfler fans, Richie Sambora fans, and many more that I could go on till the end of the programme. Who would?
Guns N' Roses.
You're very quiet, Tim. Turn yourself up a bit.
Santana, Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, because that's all very well. They're all guitar virtuosos, but the session musician who played this is also an absolute virtuoso. But it's the whole context, the way the whole song builds up to the guitar solo in Goodbye to Love is one of the greatest pieces of popular music ever written. It's magnificent. It's a majestic. It's the pinnacle of their careers. Anyway. Can we move on to the letters page?
Doug Verner emailed us at studio. Yeah, he's magnificent. I think we should just get him on the show. It would be easy. Doug Verner, studio@0157.org. He's travelling this week, as we mentioned in the substantive part of the letters page. So he's just posed some questions this week for us to answer. And some of these are rhetorical.
My favourite sort.
Yes, so I'll only pause when I want a comment from you here. And we'll start with the IRL. When did the IRL become the WWF? Well, we'll talk about that in a moment. Has Dan versus Danik and media hype faded already? And is the IRL trying to replace it with more of a fair fight? Tony Kanaan versus Sam Hornish Jr. with Sam Hornish Sr. as Jr.'s bodyguard. Does he realise that in NASCAR next year, he'll have to retire since the Cup drivers weigh almost as much as him and almost certainly will fight back? Also, does Hornish Sr. just know how long a NASCAR season is? Which I love. We'll talk about that in a moment. When is Dario getting his sixth rear tyre change of the season? And how many times will Canadian Club be practising pit stops this week? Will Mrs. Hospital ever finish a race and not complain about her car? And will she ever thank her crew for rebuilding her car time and time again? If she's so good, why can't she just show the crew where her talent setting is so they can adjust that? And this is the one that that you made me think about here. What will AJR and Jetty Green Racing look like in the not too distant future, especially if Tony Kanaan moves to Penske and Dario retires, left with two budding F1 stars, and he says in brackets, try reading that with a straight face, would AJR be better off moving back to Champ Car? Worse yet, would Marco make the move on his own to Champ Car and compete with Graham Rahal, leaving AJR with only Mrs. Hospital? And how hard would Bobby Rahal laugh then?
You know what, for that reason alone, that last section, I think he has to be a permanent guest on the show, because that is the sort of speculation that we love, and that's the sort of thing that we tend to do off air. But I think we have to address that. There is a massive problem with AGR insofar as that throughout this season, it just seems to me that Tony Kanaan is getting more and more irate. Mm. For various reasons, with his own team and with other people. He's not going to win the title this year. I think Dario, the way he's going, is going to win the title.
Can't say that. Very bad luck to say that.
I didn't say which Dario.
No.
I met him at Dario G, the pop star.
Sunshine was his biggest...
Exactly, do you remember that? It was lovely, wasn't it?
I think Tim will find it on one of the hotkeys, because it's one of the beds, actually, on the beds thing. Believe it or not. He's now struggling to find it.
This is, without question, the most eclectic air on the oval we've ever done. But let's go back to the issue. Yeah, it's a very good point. Hornish is as good as gone.
Yeah.
Canaan could well move. We have a situation then where Andretti Green Racing would be left with the woman who's bringing in all the money, because Motorola and various other sponsors are producing an enormous amount of cash into the, or pushing an enormous amount of cash into the team, and they have Marco, who, despite all the good things that we like to say about Ivan, I think the talent that is probably there, he really isn't showing enough of it this year.
Yeah.
And you know, he's not exactly going to be the man to spearhead a challenge for the title.
And can I just say that Mark Lowe's biggest move of the season was getting in between him, his dad and Sam Hornish's dad, and dragging them away, going, oh, come on, Dad, you're really embarrassing me now.
I'd have to go back on YouTube and look at that. It is absolutely brilliant. Marco has to push him away.
But
if you look at it closely as well, they both start laughing when the other unknown assailant attacks Sam Hornish Senior. It's a peculiar state of affairs in the IRL. But the Andretti Green thing is very interesting insofar as that I'm not really sure where the talent is going to come from.
Mm.
It's not like they're grooming anybody for this. You know, there doesn't seem to be. And the dream ticket in many ways would be a move for Marco to join Newman Haas with Graham Rahal, and obviously Champ Car would be rubbing their hands if that happened, but we'll just have to see. It's wonderful, and the great thing is we've got such a vacuum in which to speculate over the next 6 months. So,
and in the background was in fact the man that you've just tipped for the title in IRL,
Dario G.
Indeed,
he's going to have to come with a late run.
You have to get a drive first.
Only halfway through the season, there's plenty of time.
Now,
I talk about some punishments here.
Special prize for anyone who can tell me what the sample was out of that. I want
Life in the Northern Town by Dream Academy.
Well done. Well done.
That song by the lead singer was Nick Laird Close, was his name.
Very good.
What's the prize, John?
The prize is a trip to the British Touring Car Championship this weekend at Donington Park for you.
Well done, Declan. You've won a trip to Donington Park.
I've got a jazz brunch on Sunday morning.
Fantastic. Penalties.
Penalties then. $25,000.
Come quiet again, Tim.
$25,000 to Team Penske.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
$25,000 to Andretti Green Racing.
Mm.
Unspecified amount to Tony Canaan. Unspecified amount to Sam Hornish Jr.
What about senior?
I suppose
they can't sanction him, can they?
Suspended from the pit lane for one race.
They removed his hard card for one race.
And he has been placed on probation until the end of the calendar year. The other person involved, who was Anthony Fedley, or...
Is this this third person in the jeans?
Yeah, he was the hanger-on from the Andretti Green group who jumped on Sam Hornish Senior in a comedy way.
He was described as the non-uniformed hard card credential holder.
Right.
He has had his league-issued hard card, which was granted through Andretti Green Racing, suspended,
mm-hmm.
and his credential request opportunities have also been suspended indefinitely, so he won't be getting one back.
Mm. We just need to talk about the build-up to that. There was a coming together out on the circuit originally.
There was no proper build-up. I mean, you need music as they walk to the ring and lights and...
Dry ice, laser show.
There should have been a weigh-in at least, and a stare-down at the press conference.
Sam Hornish Jr. basically went for a move that was never on Tony Canaan and clashed into his side pod and knocked Tony. And I can understand Tony's frustration, because that's just exactly what Declan was saying earlier on. That's exactly personified in that moment was the whole of his season, how it's gone. He had a great car. He was carving his way through traffic and Hornish drives into him for no apparent reason other than Hornish is not very good on road circuits and he takes a lot of stick for it and he was trying too hard.
John, and it's very, very important as well, if you look at the incident, probably 8 times out of 10 there would have been Canaan's car would have been put out of the race.
Yes.
He was just lucky. He hit the one part. He hit the part of the side pod and the part which was just strong enough to take that blow, and it left a NASCAR-style donut on the side pod of the Andretti Green car, the 7-Eleven car.
At the end of the race, as they came into the pit lane. Now, not a lot of people saw this on the TV. You had to have eagle eyes, and in fact, I'm not sure if everybody got the replay, but Canaan came around Hornish and chopped him off going into the pit lane and brake-tested him going into the pit lane, which was a bit stupid, but there was no contact, but I can understand his frustration. Then when they came to a halt, somehow Hornish had got back in front of him in the pit lane, stopped a bit further down the pit lane.
I think he drafted him.
Yeah, he did. there's only way you could get by him. Clearly, Canaan wasn't very happy, even though the original incident had happened in the first quarter of the race, so that was like an hour and a half before. He was shouting at him through his helmet, and... there was, you know, he started to go towards him. There was a bit of ironic hand clapping from Hornish Jr. And as Canaan got within about four paces of Hornish Jr., Hornish Sr. jumps in between them, puts both his hands on Tony Canaan and pushes him back out the way in a sort of a bit of a handbags way. But I thought that was totally unwarranted. And that's what kicked it off.
Exactly, because there was no guarantee. In fact, Canaan said afterwards he had no intention of hitting him. He wanted to go up and basically have it out with him verbally.
I know obviously he's going to say that, but I don't think Canaan is that type of driver. I don't even think Hornish really is that type of driver to want to get into fisticuffs. His dad.
Not at all. It was outrageous, and I don't think a one race ban is enough.
I don't understand why, you know, Tony Canaan gets fined as an individual, plus his team gets fined. Did Hornish get fined as an individual as well?
Yes, he did.
Yes.
But you know what's been lost in all of this, and what hasn't come out in any editorial comment, what's been slightly lost in all this, if you look, while that's developing, this whole thing is going on, at least one, I think it was Darren Manning's car, goes by in the pits. Mm. Now, in the pit lane, he's probably doing 20 or 30 miles an hour.
Yeah.
But if two human beings fell in the way of a car doing 20 or 30 miles an hour while struggling and hit it, there'd be an awful lot of damage done to them, you know, it's a serious injury. And so it's far more serious than just two people having a fight. It could have endangered themselves quite badly and other people.
Yeah, absolutely. Finally, on IRL, and a final point is from Doug, and I'll just leave this hanging. Talking about Mrs. Hospital, by the way, he says, was she serious or delirious when she said after leading the Indy 500 2 years ago that she would only go to Formula One if the team that contacted her was good enough?
Well, absolutely, yeah.
Let's go to Champ Car now.
Before we do that, because there was, of course, the Corning 100 Indy Pro Series double header.
Right.
Supporting the IRL. And,
lovely Pyrex trophies, by the way, I noticed.
And Alex Lloyd, his worst weekend of the season.
Did he come second?
He finished third in one of the races.
Failure for Britain abroad.
Yeah.
Clearly there. Whereas it's another sterling third place for that bloke in Formula Spec Racing, who we haven't mentioned yet, I don't think.
He had too much downforce in the Saturday race and kept losing time on the front and back straight. He did finish third, which means he hasn't finished off the podium all season.
Mm.
Top six, of course, reversed for race two. Mm-hmm. So he started from fourth and went up to win.
Oh, well done him.
So he now leads championship by some 4,000 points.
Yeah, but don't you get 2,800 for a win or something?
Not quite.
Okay. Now we can move to Champ Car.
Champ
and
Car.
Here's some more questions that may or may not be debated in this section. Did Champ Car solve the flying standing start problem by having an immediate start signal? Is Robert Dornbos the luckiest man ever for stalling his car in the grid and therefore missing being part of the lap one carnage?
Oh, it was ridiculous.
Hang on. Will Champ Car add more natural courses in the future so that a single wreck on lap one doesn't take out a third of the field? Can Sebastian Bourdais learn to drive in the wet? And will an F1 team take someone with such driving deficiencies? Oh, hang on a second. Someone took Scott's speed. How much better are Newman, Haas and Lanigan cars? Are Oriel Servia's and Ryan DL's performances indicative of a general equality coming to future races this year? And will a Dornbos Bordeaux power points race stay tight until the end, says Doug Verney. See, I like this man. Let's take the accident first of all. Paul Tracy, dumbest man in the world or what, picks up a front wing, which clearly he probably can't see in due deference to him, but goes through two corners, two quickest corners.
He may not be able to see it, but his team presumably are watching the TV.
Right, and are shouting, you've picked up a wing, you've picked up a wing, and then he goes into a flat out right, left hand, right-hander, and just dials it into the wall.
Do you think, as they were saying on the radio, you picked up a wing, they were just emphasising about doing flapping motions with their arms? It was just... I have to say, and in all seriousness again, and I seem to be bizarre when I'm being the serious one, the real... A bigger problem, the Paginot accident. Have I got a word? It was Paginot who went over the...
Comedy.
Yeah, Comedy, a bigger problem. The Comedy accident, I thought, was reminded me very much of the Villeneuve accident in Australia, just a slower speed, thank goodness.
Mm.
But it was it's quite frightening, and you never want to see, it's one of the downsides of this type of racing, on, especially in tight corridors of those worlds, you never want to see cars like that go up into the air like that. But the worst part of it all, that was, it took out so many cars in a series that just doesn't have enough.
17.
You know, it's like, and ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Toronto Grand Prix, and if you've joined us late, there's four cars left.
Well, you know, what came about with that, don't forget, two of those cars got back into the race after that accident. And one of the things that I thought was very, very dangerous was that Graham Rahal was, I think, was part of that early on. And then he had another accident later when he got tipped into the tyres on driver's left, when he actually clipped the back of his teammate, that was Sebastian Bourdais, knocked his wing off,
yeah,
his own wing off. He came into the pits, and he's pointing at his left front suspension, saying, there's something wrong with me steering. They changed the nose, they wiggled a few things around, and sent him back out.
Yeah,
and you
could
see, as he went back out, he knew, we knew, because we could see the steering wheel, he had about 45 degrees of lock on. Yeah. And the first time he came, they were right-hander, and he started to lose the back end. He didn't have enough left-hand lock left to be able to put any opposite lock on, and he ended up facing the wrong direction. That could have been a huge accident, and you can't just send people out onto a road course while you're doing 170 mile an hour with dodgy suspension.
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Although, you know, I'm Rahal's incident does remind me a little bit of the man who I feel really sorry for, and another Brit, and that we never talk enough about, is Ryan DL.
Yeah, well, he was looking good in the race. He gave up the lead, didn't he, to Will Power, who got down the inside of him, and he was keeping Power and Bourdais behind him on proper speed for Pacific Coast Motorsports.
Yeah, it would be their best result of the year, and I just feel,
I think it was his own fault though, Dex. I've got to be honest. He Justin Wilson went up the inside, took the position, and you know where else is he going to go? You know he's going to come to the outside, and all DL had to do was lift off, and he'd have got fourth position.
Yes, but the thing is, that incident and a number of others, you know, including Rahal's spin on his own and all the other things that happened, if we're to be brutally honest, it really wasn't a good advert for the quality of driving in Champ Car.
Oh, no, it made it for a fantastic race, though.
It was just mega.
I love the fact that after last week's debacle, there were still some people out there who thought Champ Cars and Bridgestone slick tyres would be all right in the wet. And when you saw Alex Tagliani just drifting off in the slowest and longest prelude to an accident ever as he came at the end of Lakeshore Drive and turned into that right-hander, and the car just pitched ever so gracefully sideways at about 30 or 40 miles an hour and slid gently into the tyre barrier.
I was just wondering if he was going to get out of the car, run to the corner, get a camera out, and then photograph the accident as it happened.
He could have moved the tyres before the car
hit
them.
Out of the way, yeah.
Yeah.
Can I just say, I had no idea he was in a Honda Prelude, so... I suppose the one thing about the last 2 weeks, which literally, it's a bit like Champ car have basically taken the point standings and put them into a box and shaken them really viciously and thrown it back out onto the onto a table. And we seem to have ended up with a situation where, would you believe this? And no word of a lie, this is the first time in about 4 years since Sebastian Bourdais is not leading the point standings.
Apart from at the very start of this season where he didn't...
Well, everybody had the same points, yeah. But then again, he would he not have been leading the points by alphabetical order? Like, I always like to look at the Premier League when Derby get in, because at least they're quite near the top before the season starts due to alphabetical order. So if I do a quick check...
By not winning the first race, he wasn't leading then.
Fair enough, but it's a very rare thing. But if you look at the championship now...
I've got to tell you, though, Dex, one of the things that struck me from this weekend, and I didn't see the race live because I was still flying, but I managed to catch the repeat of both the IRL and the Champ Car race. And the coverage that really made me think about Sebastian Bourdais and actually has... significantly changed my opinion about him. Had nothing to do with the race this week. It was the shots of the podium from last week when he refused to shake hands with Don Bos.
Yeah, I have to say he has covered himself in absolutely no glory whatsoever with his behaviour.
That was appalling. Everybody, even I was wondering what Jeremy Shaw was going to say on the international TV feed about the weaving incident and the blocking that he said that Don Bos was doing to him last week. And no one has found anything on the TV in the week following that would bear out what Bourdais was saying. He was never close enough. He never got close enough to make a pass on him. It's not like he got put on the grass like Marino did with Stefan Johansson, not once but twice in the American Le Mans series. Now that's blocking. That's blocking. When you put the guy alongside you on the grass at 170 mile an hour, that's proper blocking.
So like Ignition Werner.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that wasn't 170 mile an hour. That was about 65 or 70.
But that was amazing.
Sorry,
not Rob Dyson at the start, but the Dyson car at the start.
Chris Dyson.
I'm afraid, by the way, on a separate note, I'm afraid, based on the rules and based on the video evidence, they're banged to rights.
Yeah, he was out of line.
Unfortunately, and Rob Dyson took up far too much airtime during the weekend telling people how wrong the series was and how right he was and how they'd done nothing wrong. And I hope he's quite ashen-faced or even red-faced looking at the video now, because they got it wrong. They got to the inside before the start. So that's another issue. But back to the weaving, I've looked at the race again, and as I said to you at the time, unless, you know, Bourdais has got super vision or really has a serious problem with depth perception.
I've just realised what it is. He's already thinking Formula One, and he's thinking about qualifying rules in Formula One, where anyone who is in fact on the track at the same time as you, even if you can't see them, if they pull a cross into the air that you might be using later, then that's blocking, isn't it?
That's only true if you're driving a Ferrari, though.
Oh, that's true.
Oh, but he's driving a red-powered car.
So basically, what we can really ascertain from the last 2 weeks is that Sebastian Bourdais is standing amongst people who really want to see him succeed in Formula One, i.e., us mainly, has really, really collapsed.
Totally through the floor.
Yeah, based on his inability to drive in the wet and his thoroughly, childlike tantrums based on the fact that there are two people ahead of him in the points. Let's look at the points. 3 points separate Don Bos, Will Power and Sebastian Bourdais. Absolutely brilliant. And 23 points back to Justin Wilson. It's a cracking second half of the season. It's a shame nobody will see it.
Very quick final question before we let you go. You may not be able to answer that because I haven't given you notice of this. Do we know who won the Motorsport TV ratings war on the East Coast this weekend? Because Formula One, Champ Car and ALMS were all tape delayed and running at pretty much... Champ Car was pretty much live. But Formula One and ALMS were tape delayed to almost the same time.
Yeah, I've, off the top of my head, I've read the figures. And off the top of my head, I know Indy Racing got a 1. Mm-hmm. Champ Car got around a 0.7. ALMS got around a 0.7. F1 got around a 1. So really the winners would be, I suppose, would be F1 and Champ Car.
ALMS only got a 0.7 on CBS.
I've got to double check that, but it's not brilliant. It might be a little bit more. I, as I said, I'm definitely trying to check now. Obviously, the real winner would be, as always, would be NASCAR, but we don't even count them. We think of it just the single seater and the sports cars.
Yeah.
F1 is getting not bad ratings on Fox, even tape delayed. Okay. It's not bad. So, and that's obviously a network. So, give me a couple of seconds. I'm just going to see if I can quickly pull out the figures for the race on CBS on Sunday.
Right, well, when you do that, we'll start the music because we're almost out of time on this week's Midweek Motorsport. And we'll be back next week with another 2 hours of nonsense from Wellingborough and from London and all points around the world.
Show.
A lot more Champ Car on next week's show. What else?
A big special guest is Robert Doornbos.
Robert Doornbos.
Can we all talk to him?
Yes, we can all
talk to him. He's our favourite driver at the moment.
Don't forget our competition. If you'd like to win 2 tickets for the Silverstone Classic, all you have to do is text your answer to the following question. Which of these are an Italian multi-car manufacturer? Is it answer A, Alfa Romeo, answer B, Bentley, or answer C, Citroen? Text A, B, or C, plus your name, please, to Globecast, GLOBECAST, then the answer, 603-00, it costs you 50p, plus your network charges. And Declan, you can now tell us that the ratings were?
ABC for the IRL got a 1 rating.
Right.
That's about 900,000 homes. American Le Mans Series Limoc taped got a 0.6. And Formula 1 got a 0.9.
I'm very, very surprised at that. Declan, thanks for air on the ovals this week.
Off the screen, it was so low.
Thanks for air on the ovals this week, Declan Brennan. He'll be back next week, as will I, and Tim Gray, but from Midweek Motorsport. For now and for this week, it is bye for now.